This is Steve Weiner. I used to write for the David Letterman Show. This is Mike Chisholm, who spent an entire life dreaming of being on the David Letterman Show and will never happen. Watch his podcast instead. La, 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 la.
Welcome once again to the Letterman Podcast. My name is Mike Chisholm. I love this show in the sense that we have had a direction from the very beginning as to who the guests on the show are going to be. And we have kind of stuck with that over 110 episodes, whatever it is. We have stuck with that. You know, we have folks who worked for the show. We recently had John Beckerman on, people who were associated with the show in some way, shape, or form. They were on the show, featured on the show, that kind of a thing. That's going to be growing exponentially this year in 2024. We're going to be definitely filling that category. And the third category are people who are part of the community, the Letterman enthusiast community, those of us who just love the show so much. And maybe we were part of a bit. Maybe we got our letter written on the air. Maybe we got a chance to see the show and there was something behind that. We're still talking about it all these years later. We want the Letterman Podcast to be a venue for some of those people to come on here and to be a part of the community and to tell their story. That's what today's episode is. And I just appreciate the fact that Len Goldberg has taken time out of his day to come on the Letterman Podcast today and talk a little bit about D-Day. He was there for Dumpster Day. He was there when, to all of our horror, the day after the last Late Show with David Letterman, call it an oversight, call it whatever you want to call it. For whatever reason, the stagehands and the people who were in charge of converting the Ed Sullivan Theater to the new incarnation of The Late Show with Stephen Colbert came in, and the orders were, let's get rid of everything. We're gutting the place and let's gut it. And it's so funny because I can put myself back in that day when, it was just so sad to see this thing that we love so much. And 24 hours earlier, we're feeling so nostalgic about. I believe they stuck the landing. It was a perfect 10 out of 10 last Late Show with David Letterman. I think a lot of people would agree with that. Never mind the last show, the 6 weeks previous, read Scott Ryan's book, Last Days of Letterman. The previous 6 weeks was this unbelievable lead up to that show. And then the next day, and I got to say, Dumpster Day, as much as it broke my heart, there's a part of it that is almost, when you look at the body of work and the tone of David Letterman's productions up to that point in Late Night, isn't it funny how the next day, Dave, who mocked show business and whatnot, the next day, the sets and all of these things were mercilessly tossed into dumpsters, almost thoughtlessly. And so Len is a guy who actually went down there. We talk a little bit about his where his enthusiasm for Letterman started. He had a letter written on the on the show as well. But he went down and he got something pretty cool out of the dumpster. By the way, this is something I've never shown on the show before. I'm going to show something that a staffer sent to me. It didn't quite make the dumpster, but Len has something from the Ed Sullivan Theater box office that he ended up with. For me personally, this is something that a staffer had sent me. This is one of the signs that was in the back of the Ed Sullivan Theater. There were these squares where there would be, signs for the Late Show or for Late Show with David Letterman. So that's something that one of the staffers sent to me. I just love episodes like this. I'm a big show and tell guy, and I love the community episodes that we have here where people come on and they can tell their stories. And it's so fun to be a vessel for these people to come and do that. So Len Goldberg is that guy. He's also a fellow Canadian. Soft spot in the heart as well. So the Letterman Podcast we have one sponsor only. That's hello-deli.com. Go to hello-deli.com if you want to get Late Show with David Letterman merchandise, like mugs, like hats, all sorts of stuff packed with love by Rupert G himself. hello-deli.com. So with that, we would love to present to you, edit this a little bit. Okay. All that being said, we are proud to present our episode here with Len Goldberg. Len, I am really excited that you have taken time to come onto the Letterman Podcast today and tell a little bit of your stories, of the encounters that you had with the show. You, I'm wearing the thank you and goodnight jacket today because, obviously, May 20th of 2015 was, you know, a very emotional day for everybody. The last time that Dave produced, Dave and Company produced a late show, his last late night television after 32 years production. And we were emotional. I think we all knew as enthusiasts that we were going to be emotional about that. But there was an extra set of emotion that showed up the next day when, to our horror, we saw the set that we loved for decades being tossed aside into the dumpsters. And I've always wanted to talk to some people who took things into their own hands, if you for lack of a better term, and went and did that. You have been an enthusiast of David Letterman for a long, long time. I want to talk about this. I love having folks from the community on the show. Thank you so much for taking time to be on the Letterman podcast.
No, thank you, Mike. I'm honored. I'm honored, and I'm excited to be included in your podcast here. Oh my God, what a meteoric rise. All of a sudden, you're best friends with the producers and Rupert. You're being invited to parties Rockefeller? Sullivan Theater, Theater. You're being invited to parties. You're delivering speeches and eulogies, and oh my God. Who are you?
I don't know, man. It's weird. I don't understand it. I am enjoying it, and it's a lot of it's certainly a lot of fun to connect with so many like-minded people who are completely different. Like, I find that a lot of the folks who are longtime enthusiasts of what Dave and Company put out seem to all be characters unto themselves, and it's a lot of fun getting to know these people as this process kind of organically just kind of grows. And so thank you for saying that. I appreciate it. Do you remember when you became aware of what Dave was doing? Were you a fan right from the beginning? Were you someone that came in midstream? How long have you been an enthusiast of Dave?
I was at McGill University, 1982, February, I believe. And I had bad habits. I don't know. I was up eating McCain Super Fries till 2 in the morning, cramming for exams and whatnot. And I remember I was up one night, the show came out, David Letterman. I never heard of him before. I wasn't aware that he had the daytime show before that, I guess 1980.
Yeah.
I'll check this out. And it just caught my attention. It just captivated me right away. He wasn't, he was so real. He was so, street. It was minutes into it, I knew that this was something. It was definitely something. It was anything. And yeah, so I was there from the first moment of the late night show. I didn't know about him on the daytime show. So not that iconic, not that impressive.
No. See, and it was the college kids that really took off. You know, you had the 1-2 punch of Johnny Carson, who the previous generation was their constant. And then suddenly something, entirely different, as Monty Python says, something now for something entirely different. And you're a fellow Canadian as well. I love the couple of Canadian references that you threw right in that intro. That's fantastic.
Good day, eh?
Yeah, good day. Okay, let's confuse them even more now. Added the good day on there. So you started watching Dave. You were part of that crowd that helped that meteoric rise. The college kids is where it started. You loved them for years. I know that you got a letter on the show as well. Like, was this early on? Was this is the late night run, or was this late show?
Late show, unfortunately, not that impressive. No,
everything's impressive, buddy. Do you remember the bit? Do you remember the date? Did you know it? Did you watch it every day? Did someone tell you your letter got on there?
Well, we're going back. This isn't live, right? You can edit out the coughs and
sure. Oh yeah. Well, or not. To be perfectly frank, it's not that I can't. It's funny, Len. You know, there is technology where I can edit, and there's no problem with it. But I have found that the real conversations with people, obviously, if someone goes into a coughing fit or something like that, we can edit that out. But the conversation is actually I find that the more organic, the better. And so I do as few edits as I possibly can in these shows. Also, I've had people who have asked me if there's stuff that's cut out, And you know, when you get one of these, you know, one of the writers or producers or whatever on, you find that people who gravitate towards this show love the deep dive and they don't like when we cut anything out. So I can edit. I minimally do it because we want to just make sure the content is complete. But yeah, we can edit for sure.
Okay, I'll be on my toes then. One second.
No problem at all.
All right.
You're good. You're good.
So I'd say, okay, so approximately 2012, I had been submitting letters, and the letter I submitted, so anyway, it made it on air.
But you submitted multiple times throughout the incarnations of the show. Did you submit to late night as well?
No, just the late show.
Okay.
The late show. I went bonkers for a couple of weeks. I was submitting letters. So, but I didn't know that David read the letter. I got an email from a friend of mine in San Diego, and the email read, "Hey, Goldberg, get off of American TV." And he told me my letter had been read. And I think I had the videotape running every night on Letterman. And so I went back and looked at the tape. So we looked at the tape, and the letter was, now you remember it used to be, I don't remember the letters. I don't remember what they started out as on late night, but on the late show, the letters were the CBS mailbag.
That's right.
Mailbag. I don't remember what they were called on late night, but they were called something a little different.
Yeah. Viewer mail.
Yep. Bingo. So the mailbag, my letter read and Dave read it out. Okay, so here's just what happened. Dear Dave, when the hell are we going to meet the CBS mailbag mailman?
Perfect.
And then a guy comes out, an actor comes out, and he sings the theme to the CBS mailbag, a newly conceived theme. And then basically it's considered a fail, and Dave tells him to get the hell out of the studio. And that was the basis. So anyway, that's my 15 seconds of fame. That's it.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. How did it feel when you, well, first off, you get the email, and that's fantastic. Get off American TV. That must have been delightful for you. It must have tickled you.
It did. I felt like maybe there's something here. Maybe I've got something, you know, maybe I've got something. I need to do something different with my life. Nothing came of it, but I did wonder about whether I should do something more with my life.
It's fun getting together with people. I've had a whole bunch of people reach out to me and tell me about their experiences with the show like this. And it's just delightful to highlight some of these stories. Now, at that point you had gone to New York a couple of times to, was it to see the show? Was it just, you were in New York, so you went by the Hello Deli? How did that all go?
Well, by the way, I did see the show in 1984, summer of 1984. All I remember
84. Wow. Do you remember anything about it?
Yeah. Who's the guy that sang that song about friends? Randy something or other?
Like friends in low places?
Thank you for being a friend. Randy Newman. Randy Newman. All I remember is that Randy Newman was on the show. That's all I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the only time that I was in the audience. And then there was the letter. And fast forward to the last couple of years before the Hello Deli closed. I go down to New York a lot, probably four, five, six times a year.
Yep.
Went down one time and around just slightly before closing. And May was there. So we spoke to May for a long time. May Chin.
Isn't she sweet? Partner. She's the sweetest.
What a friendly person. It actually had closed, okay? Because we were actually staying around the corner in a hotel. It just closed. She came out, unlocked the door, stood on the sidewalk 20 minutes, gave us 20 minutes of her time. What a nice person. But Rupert had just departed, missed him by minutes. Okay, great. But I was so glad to meet May. That was big. Came back a little while later. I think it was February.
Yep.
And then there was a notice on the door. I took a photo of that, by the way. There was a notice on the door saying, on vacation back on a certain day, or it might have been January and back in February. It was like the winter.
Yep.
And we're gone for a few weeks. So then I came back. I came back about 2 months later, said, okay, the note said Rupert and May will be back on this day. Came back. And then it was closed.
Yep.
And then I found out it had been shut down, and it was heartbreaking. It was heartbreaking. And but now I think there might be some opportunity through you and some other good folks, but I think primarily through you to meet Rupert. And so just depending on you for that, Mike.
No, oh, I appreciate that. You know, Rupert G, obviously, you know, one of not just an early adopter for the Letterman podcast, but you know, our sole sponsor. And it was sure, I'll tell you, the retirement weekend where we went down to where my wife and I went to New York and got to hang out with Rupert and Irene. And just the gravity of what was happening. You know, it's so funny how through a television show, people can build an emotional connection to these places and these people. And it's just, it's a wonder to me, the echoes of David Letterman showing up and you know, okay, we're going to retrofit the Ed Sullivan Theater and get it going again and bring it back up to snuff. And we're going to meet the neighbors and like Mujibar and Sarah Jewell were there. And it was just such
Wow.
It was such a neat experience, you know, seeing these things and realizing the emotional impact that they had on people. You know, we just recently had John Beckerman on, who was a head writer. You know, that episode will be out by the time our episode here that we're doing today comes out.
Great.
And I asked John what it felt like to have a sandwich named after him in Rupert's shop. And he said it was everything. Like he said, he brought his parents there to see the Beckerman on the board there. And he said it was a pretty good sandwich too. And just the joy that he got out of that. And isn't it funny how like, and Rupert, I mean, we all felt the emotional connection, his kindness translated through the television screen. And I can certainly see why so many people would make that pilgrimage to go and meet him, and have a true, you know, it was a Letterman experience, and it had nothing to do with Letterman except for the extension that Rupert was from the show. So it's very sweet that you feel that way. Obviously they are still the sponsor of the Letterman podcast. Go to hello-deli.com. And you can still buy Late Show with David Letterman merchandise. And it's the only place that you can buy official Late Show with David Letterman merchandise, mugs and hats and all sorts of fun stuff. I think there are still Rupert shirts available on hello-deli.com, and those are packed by Rupert himself. And so I'm really glad that you took this time to highlight Rupert, Len. That's really, really sweet. And we'll make sure. Yes, we will create an opportunity for some contact there for sure.
I appreciate it a lot, Mike. You know, people like you and Rupert are important. You're all in the spirit of that show, which was real. It was human. It was down to earth. It had humility, you know, and it was just something that's bygone. It's bygone. It's not here anymore. And so reconnecting with you and Rupert is all part of, I think, trying to preserve that and what Dave had going on, which was he was real. He was a man of the people. He related to the so-called common person, like, you know, you and I. He was on the street. I remember when he would do his early Man on the Street stuff. Yeah. There's Mr. Curiosity asking to look in people's shopping bags. There was Mr. Humidity. I don't know who remembers Mr. Humidity. I can even sing a little bit of Paul Schaefer's theme from that. I don't know the exact words. It's Mr. Humidity, that's you.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah.
The man on the street stuff. And I mean, you know, and Rupert, you know, again, talking to John Beckerman the other day, John Beckerman was the one who created the Fun with Rupert, you know, concept. And it was
the remotes.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the whole reason why that started was because Dave got so big that he couldn't be the man on the street anymore.
Oh, right.
They wanted to try and find a vessel or a way that Dave could be on the street without being on the street. And you know, you can listen to the John Beckerman episode and it talks about the entire evolution. Also, John Beckerman just did his staff favorite moments on the official Letterman channel. Go and check that out as well. He talks about it there. But yeah, like the idea that we could still have Dave interacting using that razor sharp wit and the commonality, but also a little bit of askewness, a little bit of strangeness. And that's Rupert was the way that Dave could stay on the street for a long, long time. So that, yeah, very, very cool talking about that. Now, I don't want to bury the lead. The lead was, okay, dumpster day. Holy cow. Well, no, wait, you know what? There is one other thing that I want to talk about before we get to dumpster day. Because Mark Carzen, who's a friend of the show, and the author and of Late Night Bumpers, you can go to latenightbumpers.com and you can get these amazing reproductions of the bumpers, the original bumpers. He's the one that took the photographs, manipulated the photographs, he and the team, to create a huge part of the mood of Late Night with David Letterman. Mark Carzen, you've got a little bit of a brush with him as well.
Well, so right after the final show, May 2015, and everything was put in these dumpsters. Now I dove into that, and we'll get into that a bit later. Now, the bumpers appeared on eBay a little bit later, around June. They started appearing on eBay, and so many of the bumpers. And I don't know if, I don't think they came from the dumpsters. I didn't see them in there. I think it was someone associated with the show.
Yep.
Had the bumpers, and they just, you know, they had, we didn't know who they were. They just had some name on eBay, and they started putting them up, and the bids were going high on these, into the hundreds of dollars each, fast. And I contacted, figured out how to get in touch with Mark Carzen. First of all, I found out who's behind them.
Yep.
Mark Carzen, photographer, artist, creator, genius, was behind them.
Absolutely.
Somehow I figured out how to get in touch with Mark Carzen. And I had a question for him about the bumpers. I think I wanted to authenticate them, okay? I'm just going to be honest. I actually wanted to do some bidding on these.
Oh, for sure.
And so I wanted to authenticate them. And that's why I contacted Mark Carzen. And he said, oh, my God, that's where they are. They don't have the legal right to sell these. These are my property. Thank you so much for letting me know. That's where they are, and that's what's happening to them. I'm going to shut this whole thing down now. I looked on eBay, I think hours later, gone. They were all gone, and he retrieved them, and he got his bumpers. He got his bumpers back. No, I didn't get any. That's the tragedy. But much more important is that Mark Carzen has his beloved bumpers, and he's doing whatever he wants to do with his creations, which were photographic and also collages. They'd actually take bits and pieces and put them in there. So they were really, like, you know, old school artworks and creations. So that's the anecdote.
Yeah. So we've had Mark on the show twice, and both times, he went into the meticulous nature, like again, when those bumpers were being created for Late Night with David Letterman, and for those who are unsure what a bumper is, I don't think anybody has gone this far into this episode, into this show, without knowing what a bumper is, but we'll say it anyway. Going out to commercial, coming back from commercial, there would always be this amazing artwork that had to do with New York City somehow, and usually late into the night. And it had to do with New York City. And then Late Night with David Letterman would be put into these pieces of art coming in back and coming back from commercial. That's what a bumper is. That's what this bumper art is. Mark Carzen, was kind of the chief principal. He and his team of people, Bob Pook, Ed Hall, and others, Bill Shortridge was there as well, and others who were part of creating these things. We're talking four people to create something like that. I'm like, yeah, Photoshop didn't exist back then. It was an incredible process of how they would take these original pictures and then manipulate them to create these unique pieces of art. Now, I don't know this for a fact, but that it was necessarily the ones that you had pulled off eBay and he retrieved. What I do know, though, is that he has done gallery exhibitions with these pieces. it would be really cool to know if some of the pieces that he has had in these exhibitions were actually some of the ones that you alerted him to and he got back. That would be very, very interesting to know if that were the case. The next time I talk to Mark, I'm going to ask him about that. So that was really cool. Obviously, you wanted to bid on them, like, you know, seeing them. It brings back a whole bunch of nostalgic feelings seeing these things. It was a part of Late Night with David Letterman. There's no question about that. If you watch Mark Carson's episodes, there's quite a few that we have gone through. Well, not, I shouldn't say quite a few. He did thousands of them over the run. But you can go to latenightbumpers.com and he has reproductions of them that are for sale. There's even a couple of posters where there's four of them on one presentation that can be framed and put up. So
nice.
Yeah. So it's cool to hear that connection as well. Nice job there for doing that, Len. That's fantastic. That's super, super cool. Have you gotten the Late Night Bumpers book?
I do not have the Late Night Bumpers book. It's on that Mark Carson's website, I gather. So,
it's on latenightbumpers.com. Absolutely.
Well, I'm thinking of maybe getting an original. I know there's a few originals from time to time that he will put out there. So I'm considering that. I like the originals. I like the idea of having something in my hand that was in their hands. So contemplating that, and we'll see what happens.
It's like you've done this before. It's like you've segued into the next topic on a podcast before there, Len. Well done. Something in your hand. Now, I want to know, what was it that motivated you to go down there in May of 2015? Did you see what was happening online? Because I remember, because my last time that I saw the show, that was when the picture was taken and all of that, was April 20th. So it was a month beforehand, before Dave retired. And I, you know, I remembered everything about that experience because while we were down there for 5 or 6 days, whatever it was, I had gone by the theater so many times, gone over to Rupert's like multiple times. You know, I went and saw him and May. We ate there a couple of times. And I mean, I knew the geography really, really well. It was fresh in my mind. And you know, watching the last Late Show, you know, incredible. Then you're starting to see pictures of the party afterwards, people wearing the Thank You Goodnight jackets, people wearing the Foo Fighters t-shirt, different things happening. And the next day, you know, watching the coverage of Dave and company shutting down shop, the next day these pictures started appearing on Facebook and they started appearing on the internet. And it was these iconic pieces of the set. There's one of them right there, right behind us here. The we got the bridge in here, you know, being thrown away into these dumpsters. When did you become aware of that and what did you do about it?
So I'm from Canada and I was actually in Las Vegas at the time, on a hiking trip. And I was a little mad at myself. I said, you know, why didn't I go to New York, try to get, you know, a standby ticket and try to get into the last show? I figured I'd have no shot. So I just hopped on a plane and was not able to get into the last show. I was not able to get a standby ticket. And I was in New York for a few days. I was just kind of hovering around, seeing what's happening. Who would I see? I didn't think that they were going to be throwing the whole studio into dumpsters. So I'm just that sort of person, a lot of hovering. I went back, I think it was the next day.
While the last show was happening, were you there when all that excitement was happening on 53rd Street for the last show?
I just saw that I wasn't going to get in.
So you weren't okay. Cause that was pretty crazy too. Jay Thomas was down there for his radio show. There was a lot of excitement on that last day. Trailers were out there for all the people in the top 10 list. And yeah, there was chaos on 53rd Street on May 20th.
Yeah. I was so preoccupied by being mad with myself that I hadn't gotten down there at a good time to get into the show. I do that. Gotcha. I got kind of mad. So I just kind of got out of there. I do that. Yep. Get myself up a little bit sometimes. And then I went back the next day. I just didn't know what was going to happen. I'm kind of a collector. I didn't know what was going to happen with the marquee, the sign. I wanted to really see if they're going to take down the marquee.
Yep.
And then there's these dumpsters, and there's people in the dumpsters, and there's like a chair, there's seats from the studio in there. Yep. What the heck?
Ed Sullivan what? Theater seats, absolutely.
What are they doing? What are they doing? I didn't understand what was going on, and it was pretty competitive. It was a little aggressive. I didn't want much of a part of that.
Really? There. That's interesting. Yeah, so there were people kind of jockeying around and jumping in there and stuff, and it was
No fights broke out, but you know, it was a real feeding frenzy, because it's like, why are they throwing this out? I mean, this should be in the Smithsonian Institution. Actual chairs, you know, people sat in for so many years watching Dave and Paul and the gang. Why would they junk that? So I got in there, and people seemed to be pretty focused on the chairs a lot. There were some other things being taken, and my eye caught the colors, the gold and blue, mm-hmm. something rectangular. I'm into collecting like cardboard posters. I have like old cereal boxes. I'm more into that sort of thing.
Yep.
Not the big, your larger items. And I moved some scrap out of the way, and I just you want me to show you now? Want me to,
please do, yeah. Show us what you got.
I have it in our archival plastic here. I have it in archival plastic, so this is acid-free plastic, so that it will never be degraded. Now you can see. So this was beside the box office. So when you go to buy your tickets. Okay, you'd go up to the box office. This was beside the box office.
Yep.
Okay. And so for me, other than the marquee, which Dave has, and he's auctioning off in a fundraiser for Habitat for Humanity.
Yep.
This might be the last remaining piece of the frontage of the Ed Sullivan Theater from Dave's era. And I just snagged this. Didn't have to fight anybody to get it. And I just got out of there. This is it, man. This is I don't even have words to describe how I feel about this. I just, to have this in hand, I've got like part of like the soul of Dave Letterman here. It's just, you know, I've got items that are maybe worth a little bit more than this, you know, in terms of if you put things up for auction, that's, I wouldn't sell this for anything. I would never part with this. No amount of money would exceed this sentimental attachment to this. Mwah. And you can see through all the how it's roughed up. It was pretty roughed up there in the dumpster, it wasn't in this condition in the window. It wasn't in this condition, but when it was in the dumpster, it was compromised. You can see, and there was some moisture damage there, and I noticed it was a little bit wet, but anyway, the coloring is there, the integrity is there, so that's it. That's my story.
It's super, super cool, you know, and it's funny you talk about the seats. I've had a lot of staffers who we've had on the show here who have a pair of seats in their basement or in a few different places. A lot of the staffers ended up with seats, which I was very delighted to hear about. But it's funny, Dave actually talked about the seats on a recent episode. I believe it was Strike Force 5 when he guested on the boys, the current boys, Colbert, Myers, Fallon, Kimmel, and John Oliver all did a podcast together called Strike Force 5 during the writer's strike. And it was to raise money for their staffs that were all out of work at that point. And Dave appeared on, I believe it was episode 7 or 8 or something like that. And he talked about how how everything was thrown away. And while he didn't say, you know, he if you listen to the expression of his voice, obvious disappointment and to say the least, but he would talk about how, because that happened, he gets people that walk up to him every once in a while with a chair from the theater, and they say to him, "Hey, can you please sign this?" And you know, he kind of, he goes and signs it. That
they
happens
actually
to him.
Go to the trouble of, they know his whereabouts, and they take the chair.
Yep. Yep.
And they transport themselves whatever distance. Okay.
He says it happens from time to time. So I found that to be a little bit charming and a lot heartbreaking. So Yeah. Very interesting, yeah. The idea. Like, and it's funny because we've heard from other people. I don't know if this one actually made it to the dumpster. I've heard that a lot of things got intercepted on the way to the dumpster. This is from a former staffer here. Some of the other bridges,
that's incredible.
Some of the other bridges as well, you know, were saved. I know that there's a couple of folks who are former staffers that have, like, in a storage unit, the bridge, not sure what to do with it. You know, but many things, including like videotapes made it into that thing. And there are folks who got some videotapes out of that dumpster that has like stuff that never made the air, like,
oh,
crazy.
God.
Yeah. Like, oh, and then of course, you know, the bridges and things like that. Some of them famously, the little highways and the little vehicles, some people took the little vehicles off of the roads behind Dave and things like that.
Wow.
You know, somebody took a window washer. There was a little guy who was a window washer on one of the buildings behind.
Give anything to get my hands on more of that stuff. If you can connect me with anybody who, you know, could part with anything, that would mean everything. Because this, you know, this does the job, but, you know, more is better. And those tapes with pieces
crazy.
That ended up on the cutting room floor. Oh,
isn't that crazy?
I mean, this is just the stuff of legend. That's the stuff. Thanks for sharing that with me, Mike. I didn't know to that extent. Thanks for sharing with me.
No, absolutely. And that's part of why, you know, we're doing what we're doing here at the Letterman Podcast, is to kind of collect the community and try and get them all together. If we can get everybody kind of together, we all compare notes, we talk about things. And it's a lot of fun to do that. It would be great to get some of these things into people's hands who care about them. And I think that that's something that, you know, it's little keepsakes like that. Thank goodness Dave is still doing what he's doing. Are you keeping up with Dave's current projects? Have you watched My Next Guest with David Letterman?
Yeah, definitely that. And I've been following his fundraiser, Habitat for Humanity.
Yep.
For sure. I don't know if you know what's next, if you know there's something upcoming that people aren't aware of.
Well, there's all sorts of stuff. You know, like he's... So a couple of years ago, Netflix did the Netflix is a Joke comedy festival in Los Angeles. And so there was a show that showed up on Netflix called That's My Time with David Letterman. And it was, you know, I think it was 5 or 6 parts or something like that. And some comics were new up and coming comics who are just rising through the ranks of stand up would go up. Dave would come out and do a short monologue. He would introduce a comic. They would come up and do a 10-minute set, and he'd be in behind just watching them from his chair. And then they would go and sit down and do a little bit of panel with Dave. Very, very cool little show. It's on Netflix called That's My Time with David Letterman. I was actually the last show, I was down there for that. That's when I actually got my I don't know if you know my story or not, Len, but so there's me and there's Dave. That's about a month before he retired. That's the warm-up audience. That's me in the warm-up audience. That's him making fun of me.
Wow.
Yeah, he's making fun of me. I got another copy of it up there. He was making fun of me to Paul Schaefer, the whole audience laughing at me and whatnot. And the New York Times happened to be there doing a spread on him before he retired. And they took a picture of that moment. So
how did you get in there? How did you get your foot in the door with that?
Well, it was all dumb luck. I'll send you the story. I actually wrote it out. It's something called the Letter Manifesto that I wrote it. It's on the Letterman Podcast website. You can find it. I wrote 15,000 words basically talking about how that happened. And it was just happenstance. But it was a crazy, crazy turn of events. So I got Dave to sign. I got him to sign 2 copies of the picture. One of them says, "Hello, Mike. Nice seat, David Letterman." The other one is to Mike, my best friend, David Letterman, which is very, very funny. I got him to sign those down at that Netflix is a Joke event, watching That's My Time. You know, by that time, I had already started the Letterman Podcast, and Shecky hooked it up for me. Rick Sheckman hooked it up, so that could happen. So he's doing that again. He's doing that again in tickets are available in May of this year. Man. Yeah. So you can get tickets for David Letterman. I think it's called David Letterman and the Giants of Comedy. And I think it's something very similar, but it's going to be a little bit different. Like Dane Cook is going to be on it and a few other guests. that he's going to be talking to in May of 2024 down in Los Angeles. You can get tickets online right now for it. And so that's happening for sure. New episodes of My Next Guest have filmed already, and there's going to be more that are happening with that as well. So that's up and coming in 2024. That's exciting. He was just in Chicago doing some taping for that. And then also pretty neat to see when one of Dave's bits gets a new life of its own, spins off. You know, you think about Steve Young and Dave's record collection. And suddenly Bathtubs Over Broadway, a documentary comes out, and it's literally a spinoff of Dave's record collection, and watching Steve Young build a career around that is pretty neat. Well, another one's going to happen on TBS coming up. Stupid Pet Tricks is actually becoming a show. It's becoming a show. Yeah. And so it's going to be hosted by Sarah Silverman, and, both Dave and Meryl Marco are considered producers on the show. They're and sure. I don't know what they're, you know, I wouldn't imagine they have a ton of day-to-day involvement with it, but they're helping with promotion of the show and whatnot. And Sarah Silverman, obviously a longtime friend of the show, of Late Show with David Letterman. So that's happening in 24, and I think there's some other stuff happening as well. So it's nice to see Dave as active as he is. And he didn't do what, you know, he didn't do what Johnny Carson did. Johnny Carson retired and kind of went off, and that was it. We haven't had that with Dave. We've actually had, you know, it's different, obviously, than seeing him every night, but we've seen some David Letterman activity after that night, after, you know, your time there. And it's so great to see that those of us who appreciate him so much can still see him.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of hard to conceive of going from Dave four nights a week to, you know, vanishing from our lives altogether. Because, you know, there's no one like him. There's nothing like that show. I'm not going to put down other shows, but there's nothing like that. There's nothing like him. He was the last of his kind. He wasn't afraid. He's the guy who back in the day would refer to his bosses as the network weasels.
Pinheads, okay? And weasels, yep.
You can't get away with that. You can't get away with that. That can't happen today. You know, so now, yeah, he doesn't have that edge today. Whatever, you know, he's grown. He's a different guy in some respects, but just mm-hmm. he's still Dave. And to have him still working and still enabling us to still appreciate his skills and his personality and how he's real. He's a real human being. He's himself. Yep. He's not what others want someone to be. He's him. He's him. He's not curated. He's not cultivated. He's him. And he's the last of that. Take it from me. Okay. Thanks for letting me and your viewers know. There's more to come. I'm going to look up those tickets, see if I can meet the big man.
Oh, you never know. You never know. He's worth going to see for sure. It was, I'll tell you this, it was surreal. We had just started the Letterman podcast at that point. I think we only had four or five episodes out, and we were, you know, I got to tell you, just being in the auditorium with him and seeing him come out and the way that we saw it for our show, he shot three shows. So we actually saw three little monologues, three interviews with three different comics. And I'll tell you, Len, when he walked out, Candy and I, it was so cool just to occupy the same space as him. And again, his charisma, you know, and like you say, his genuineness was palpable. It was neat watching him screw around with the audience a little bit. And I mean, like, that's the part. You know, with my little memory there that I just love so much, where, you know, he would have these little inside jokes with the audience. You know, like if they're screwing around before the cameras turn on, or if he has to reshoot an intro or something like that, you know, he brings the audience in on the joke with him and then might reference it, you know, when the camera goes back on, that kind of a thing. It just, he's so good as a broadcaster, but he's also so good as somebody in front of people who can make them feel included as part of the presentation as well. And I think that that is a pretty unique set of standards that he can do it for a camera, but also do it with a live audience like any master of ceremonies could do. So
that's,
yeah.
One sec here, Mike. I'm just going to put this sign out of the sun.
Sure, man.
There we go. I don't want any more damage to that. Yeah, you know, that's very well put. I hadn't thought of it in those terms, but not only was Dave a consummate professional broadcaster, not only was Dave a consummate broadcaster, but I like the way you put it, that he had, let me start that again. Not only was Dave obviously the consummate broadcaster, but I like the way you put it, that he included the people. He included the audience. He included you at home. He was inclusive. And I never thought of it in that way, but I guess that's a big part of his appeal. You didn't feel that he was detached. He was this groomed and curated guy, you know, who spoke flawlessly. He didn't distinguish himself from other people. You were considered an equal. And he wanted you to be a part of it, and he respected and appreciated, you know, the so-called common people. I like the way you put it, his inclusivity. He included everyone. Very, very well put, Mike.
Well, I appreciate that. It's it's what I appreciate about him the most in seeing him live. What I appreciate on my next guest with what he's doing now is his curiosity. I love how curious he is with, you know, one thing that Carson talked about and he lamented about was that when he was ready to retire, there is no big show business anymore. And people are like, well, what are you talking about? There's all sorts of these celebrities and things like that. But for Carson, it was his idols. You know, it was the Frank Sinatras of the world, or the giants of the world, right? The Jackie Gleasons, the, you know, people like that. And they were all gone at that point. But where Dave has kind of, I don't know if it's something that he has done intentionally. He's seen kind of a lamentation or a regret maybe of some of his predecessors. And so what he has done is kind of flipped the script and said, okay, well, who's the most popular people in the world right now? And then you combine that with his everyman curiosity. So he can sit down with Billie Eilish and he can genuinely be curious about what it is that makes her tick, what it is that makes her so big. You know, Kevin Durant or some of these other people that he has sat down with that are kind of at the height of popular culture, at the front of popular culture. And he takes that, all of these things that you and I just kind of talked about and brings in a fresh perspective, a fresh light. I just really appreciate that about Dave. And I hope that this next year we see a lot more of that. You know what, guys like you and me, we're the ones that spread this stuff around, and it's nice to be able to connect with somebody else and to appreciate these things and, for lack of a better term, pontificate a little bit about it. Was there anything else that you wanted to note in this appearance on the Letterman podcast, Len, or are we there?
Final note, Mike.
Yes, sir.
My life's never been the same ever since Brother Theodore went off the air. I've struggled finding reasons to live since Brother Theodore no longer appeared on Letterman or in the public eye.
Mm-hmm.
If you have reasons to live, if you could submit them to me, I shared my email with you earlier. Because it's a morning struggle. I wake up in the morning, no Brother Theodore.
Nope.
No Letterman. Why get out of bed? But anyway, there's reasons to go on, I'm sure. So, Mike, help me out with that if you can. And it's a real pleasure talking with you. You're a prodigy. I don't know how you did this. You're meeting these people. You're best friends with David Letterman and the producers.
No, showing. No,
I don't
no.
know how you. So, you know, share with me your secrets. You're something else, my friend. You make things happen. You're very intrepid. You remind me of my grandfather, Maizeda, who said to me one time when I got fired from working for my cousins at a store in Montreal, I was 17, and he didn't get mad at me, my grandfather. He said to me, young man, I have one piece of advice for you. Take initiative. Take initiative. And that's what you do. That's what you do. Very impressive.
I appreciate that very, very much. By the way, that conversation with David Letterman, in the audience is the only conversation I've had with him. So I just want to be very, very clear about that. But yes, becoming friends with some of the staffers has been a lot of fun, and more to come for sure. I appreciate your words very, very much, Len. Thank you for that. They go right to the heart. And we've touched on something here where there's a lot of people, dozens of us, in fact, who want to connect and do this. If you want, we have a Facebook group on the Letterman Podcast Facebook group. Come on in. You know, it's a group where Letterman enthusiasts can kind of get together and share stories, just like what Len and I did today. This is why we do the podcast, and we're hoping that these things will grow over time. And this thing, this little clubhouse that we were all a part of, knowledge can be transferred, number one. And number two, the joy that we got from it can continue as well. We also want to thank the official Letterman YouTube channel for everything that they're doing. They're putting out, you know, every single day, they're putting out at least one, clip from this show that we love so much. And of course, we want to thank Don. We want to thank Don Giller for his YouTube channel, for everything that he's doing behind the scenes. Also the compilations he's put up, obviously. Brother Theodore, there's an entire Brother Theodore compilation. You have a reason to live. You can go to Don Giller's YouTube channel and you can watch the entire Brother Theodore compilation. Wow. And we thank Don for everything that he's doing. And let's just link arms and let's do some fun stuff. You never know. It might even be able to affect future projects from David Letterman and company. You never know. So thank you, Len. I appreciate you taking time to tell your story and to come on the Letterman podcast.
Thanks, Mike. I'm very grateful that you included me in what you've created here. It's enjoyable. It's meaningful. It's impressive. I'm honored. I'm very grateful. And I'm going to continue on in the ways that you've advised. And, if in the meantime, you can hook me up with Rupert.
We'll figure that out. We'll figure that out, buddy.
Make it happen, Mike. Come on.
The power Zoom is going to help. I'm sure that'll help very much, Len. Just stick there for a moment. I'm going to do a quick outro and then I'll come back. We can say our goodbye privately.
Okay, Mike.
Thank you so much. Oh man, this is again one of the reasons why we do this show is we said right from the very beginning, right from the very first episode with Darren Cox, this show is going to have three types of folks on it. It's going to have folks who worked for Dave and company. It's going to have people who had a brush with the show, were on the show, featured on the show, that kind of a thing. And then it's going to have people who were part of the community. Many people who were part of the community had a viewer mail letter written or a CBS mailbag letter written, read over the air. The example I love to use, Dave would call random payphones. Sometimes people picked up those payphones and they're still talking. They're telling the story 20 years later. And that's why it's so important to have people like that on this show. So I just want to say, if you have had an encounter with Letterman, somehow, some way, other productions of, please feel free to reach out for us. We've got a couple more coming up soon, as well as some staffers. I'm excited about our episode that we're working on to have Darlene Love on, to have Sandra Bernhardt on, a few other staffers as well. We've got our first Stupid Human Tricks participant coming up. I just want to say thank you so much for everybody who has supported what we have done right from the get-go here. We're stumbling forward. We don't know what we're doing. We just know that the Letterman Podcast is a hell of a lot of fun. That has been another episode of the Letterman Podcast with Mike Chisholm. Coincidentally, I am Mike Chisholm. Thank you and good night.
Overcoat and underpants.